you're in town, or if you're with us, bring a friend with you. We try to do this every year. I don't know how much longer I can stand up for it, because it's been rough this week getting ready for it. And I'm going to put the blame not on my wife, but Billy Miles. Russell and Melinda moved into a new house, and they had a get-together and invited a bunch of people to come over one night. And they looked up, and Billy Miles was giving a guided tour of their new home. And he said, "You just can't believe the master bedroom and the closet space." And he was carrying the group through. And my bedroom's even clean, folks, if y'all want to come through the bedroom. So I think that Gay is fearful of Billy Miles being there and giving a guided tour of our home. But we're going to try to get it cleaned up at 4 o'clock Monday afternoon. Be there a little early if you can. We're going to try to have everything ready. And we'll sure enjoy being with you. If you would, take your Bibles and turn to 2 Chronicles chapter 32. 2 Chronicles chapter 32. Remember, if you will, the last few weeks we've been studying about the divided kingdom, and especially the time that Hezekiah was king over Judah. Now, last Lord's Day, we looked at the first section of Hezekiah's reign over Judah. And we talked about what he did in the first reign of his kingdom. After the first year of his reign as king over Judah, he had gone through a tremendous restoration period. He had called in all the priests and the Levites and told them to cleanse themselves. Went into the temple and cleansed the temple and took out the rubbish and the filth, and then repaired the physical structure to prepare it to be spiritually available for the worship service. And then he goes out and sends invitations to all the people, both in Judah and what was left in Israel, to come to the Passover feast and the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which, of course, went on a week after the Passover feast. It was a tremendous opportunity for the people to get themselves right spiritually and to start on a reign of faithfulness to their God. Now, we said that during Hezekiah's life and during his reign as king, when we get down to the sixth year of Hezekiah's life, which we're not far away from that. By the time you get to the sixth year of Hezekiah, Assyria had invaded Israel and taken the children of Israel into Assyrian captivity. They took all the people in Israel and carried them into Babylon. And there they would spend life in captivity for the second time. Now, remember also that what basically is going on during this section of time, Assyria is going to make 3 trips into the land of Israel. And what we're going to look at this morning is the second trip through, when they surrounded the city of Jerusalem. We said that we were going to divide Hezekiah's life into 3 sections. The first section of his life, we were going to talk about his restoration success and how he restored the worship service and the Passover and the spiritual life, destroyed all the idols that were around. The second section was his sickness. Remember, Those of you that have been in Bible classes, you've been told the Bible story as a young child about how that Hezekiah basically became sick unto death. He knew that his time was near, that he was going to die. That's the second section of Hezekiah's life. And then in the end, the last section, where he invited the Babylonian people, the Babylonian kings, to come in. And later on, Isaiah asked the question, Hezekiah, what have they seen in thy house? And Hezekiah was a lot like Billy Miles. Hezekiah said, there's nothing that they hadn't seen. I showed it all. I let them see everything that is in my temple and in the house of God. And Isaiah says, because of that, your children will not remain kings in Judah. And not only that, but they are going to be, the men will be eunuchs in the Babylonian kingdom. Now, it kind of sums up one of the reasons that we talked about Hezekiah. And remember, if you will, we said it was an exciting time because it really set the tone to what was happening in Israel and Judah. Yes, it had divided at the end of Solomon's life into two kingdoms, Israel and Judah. We've been following two sets of kings, but now we're down to one king, and that's the king of Judah. And because of the faithfulness of Hezekiah, because of his dedication to God and his restoration of the temple and the worship service, the kingdom of Judah went on and existed for about 125 to 130 years after, remember, in his sixth year, the Assyrian king would take the 10 tribes of Israel into captivity. Well, Judah would continue to reign. Assyria would not ever take them captive, though they surrounded the city and made a big to-do about what they needed to do and how they needed to give up. And he told the elders of the city, don't pay any attention to Hezekiah. My king, the Assyrian king, he's the greatest thing around. He has steamrolled over every country he's walked into. And don't you dare think that a little kingdom like Judah can survive against this mighty king. You better give up. And I'm going to let you live here 2 or 3 years, and then I'm going to take you away and show you a country as good as yours. In other words, they're saying, you give up. Give up until we get the country conquered like we need to, and then we're going to take you into captivity also. So that's the environment that we're looking at. And when it's all said and done, we're down to one little sin-sick country, and that's Judah. Remember, if you will, on your maps, you can see Judah. I think it's in purple. You can see how small it is compared to the rest of the kingdoms. And then when you think about that, look at the countries round about them. You've got Edom and Moab and Ammon and Amron and Phoenicia and even Egypt. Egypt will go. They'll fall to the hands of the Assyrians. But because of the faithfulness of Hezekiah, Judah would survive. Judah would not be taken captive. I think we talked about this just a little bit on Wednesday night. We talked about how that it all came down. Notice how Hezekiah had prepared. Not only was he restoring the worship of Jerusalem and the kingdom of Judah, but he was fortifying the cities around Jerusalem and out in Judah. We even make mention of how that he had really protected Jerusalem, the city of Jerusalem. And we talked about the spring Gihon. It was a spring that self-fed out of one of the walls. And it would go down that wall, and there was a pond on the outside, and anybody outside the city could drink from that pond and from that river and from that spring. Now, on the inside of the wall, there was another pond. It eventually was a pond that we're well familiar with in the New Testament, the Pool of Siloam. And people from outside the city and inside the city received their water from the spring that flowed from the outside of the wall. They would dip long buckets down with extended ropes and cables and go down into that spring. They'd draw their water up from the inside of the city. Hezekiah knew this would be a tremendous disadvantage, because he was watching the Assyrian king. In every place he would go, he would surround the city that he wanted to conquer and literally starve them to death, or either take battering rams and batter through the walls and go on and take the people captive. Now remember, this is the kings that we talked about, that some of them were so vicious they would skin the people alive, fillet them like animals, take their hides and make tents out of them. So Hezekiah knew that he had a mighty foe. So he begins to prepare the wall at Jerusalem. He sealed it off so that no water ran on the outside of Jerusalem, but it ran inside. And he started at the Pool of Siloam with a pickaxe and a bunch of men. And he started at the spring in the wall of Jerusalem. And about 2,000 feet later, they had dug a tunnel. And the water came from that spring through that tunnel into the Pool of Siloam. It's still there to this day. It dates back to Hezekiah's day. Well, what did that do? It fortified the city. They couldn't starve them to death. They had fresh water. And those outside the city couldn't stay there forever because they had to have water and couldn't get to any. So it was a twofold purpose for a protection standpoint. So all of this is going on while Hezekiah is restoring the worship service to Judah and to those of Israel that wanted to take part. In the meantime, the Assyrian king is taking people into captivity. And because of that, eventually, he gets to Jerusalem. He's invaded Israel. He's now invaded Jerusalem. Now, early on in Hezekiah's career, he taxed them. Now he comes back, and this time it's more than just taxes. He's saying, I'm taking you captive. I'm going to take you to a country that's just as good or better than yours. In other words, your homes are gone, your farm land is over. Canaan is gone. And so he surrounds the city. And Hezekiah is instructed And they're thinking and they're reasoning. Now this is a mighty king over Assyria. But they're fighting and going to battle with arms of flesh. And we fight our battles with the arm of Jehovah God. It tells you something about the faith that Hezekiah had, but yet there were times when it seems as if he doubted that faith. That's where Isaiah the prophet comes in. Remember, if you will, the prophets that we have already talked about that prophesied during this section of time as we hit it in its chronological order. Isaiah is now the prophet of the hour, along with his cohort Micah. Then we're going to look at Hosea. And then later on, before Judah falls and they wind up in Babylonian captivity, not Assyrian captivity, we're going to be looking at the book of Zephaniah and Nahum and Habakkuk and Jeremiah. So by the time we finish the divided kingdom, and Judah falls also, then look at the prophets that we've talked about. We've looked at prophets like Amos and many, many others that we've looked at and studied during this series of studies. But basically speaking, when Hezekiah's life comes to an end, for all practical purposes, Assyria has already taken Israel, and Judah is pretty much over. In spite of Hezekiah's faithfulness, he's going to have one descendant, a young man by the name of Josiah, a good king. But the rest of the kings did nothing to help restore the faithfulness to God in Judah. And then later on, it's going to get right back into Hezekiah. You see how it ties in? It was Babylon that came up to wish King Hezekiah well. They had heard he was near death. They had heard that he was about to die, but he was going to live. And they brought him a gift. Well, why do you think Babylon was so interested in Hezekiah? Well, at the time, Babylon was in the throes of trying to overthrow Assyria. You see, Assyria had Babylon captive. Remember what they told Hezekiah? We're going to take your people down to Babylon. But as time went on, the Babylonian Empire began to seek people that would go with them to help them to overthrow the Assyrian king. So there's no doubt they were thinking in their mind, let's go up and check out old King Hezekiah. Maybe he could be useful for us down the road when we feel that our armies are strong enough that we can overthrow Assyria. So it'll later be Babylon that takes Judah into captivity, and they'll spend 70 years there in captivity. Notice, if you will, in 2 Chronicles chapter 32, we talked about how that they would surround the city, make all sorts of threats, trying to intimidate the people to give up and not go to battle against Assyria. For example, in chapter 32, and at verse 15, he said, "Let not Hezekiah deceive you nor persuade you on this manner, neither yet believe him, for no god of any nation or kingdom was able to deliver his people out of my hand and out of the hand of my fathers. How much less shall your God deliver you?" Now remember, if you will, True enough, they had defeated all the other gods. Because in reality, what kind of gods were they?
Idols.
Man-made gods that they worshipped as their savior and their deliverer. However, Judah was worshiping a different God. They were worshiping the true and the living God because of Hezekiah's faithfulness and his restoration process. They were saying, now look at the other kingdoms. Do you really think your little measly God over Judah can help you to survive? Notice, if you will, verse 20. For this cause Hezekiah the king and the prophet Isaiah the son of Amoz prayed and cried to heaven. Verse 21. The Lord sent an angel which cut off all the mighty men of valor, the leaders and captives in the camp of Assyria. So he returned with shame of face to his own land. When he was come into the house of his God, they that came forth with his own bowels slew him with the sword. Thus the Lord saved Hezekiah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem. Now, remember, if you will, we said that Isaiah gives a little bit more detail to Hezekiah's sickness, his survival, and the Babylonian people coming up to visit him. As a matter of fact, Isaiah is going to tell the people, as he is praying and securing knowledge from Jehovah God, he said, not only are these Assyrians not going to overthrow you, they're not even going to be able to shoot an arrow over the gates into your city. Though they had just run ramshod over every country they touched. And here they come to a little small country about the size of Arkansas. And God is telling them, don't worry about Assyria. Don't worry about him and the king. They're not going to be able to get an arrow over the wall to hurt you. Remember also Isaiah talks about, and it's mentioned here, but more detail in Isaiah's account. Isaiah says that an angel of God took the death of 185,000 of their soldiers one night. Now the king was not there physically. He had some men surrounding while he was in another city. He hears about what's happened. He goes back to his capital. Now what was the capital of Assyria? Anybody remember from our study? Nineveh, the place that Jonah went to and preached, was the capital. So the king leaves the battlefield, goes back to the capital city of Nineveh, goes into the temple of his God, and is worshiping his God, his idol, while his sons come in and take his life. You see the mindset of this generation, how ungodless and ungodly they could be. Verse 33 says, Hezekiah slept with his fathers and they buried him in the sepulchers of the sons of David. Manasseh takes over in chapter 33. And if you'll notice on our chart, it kind of runs out the kings of Judah. You've got Manasseh reigned 55 years. He was evil as they could be. Amon, 2 years. Joash, 31 years, was a good king. Jehoahaz, 3 months. Jehoiakim, 11 years, and he was just a puppet. You see, what happened was that Egypt came into the picture and took some of the latter kings into captivity, and Egypt was taxing them. So they was getting it from Assyria on one side and Egypt on the other. Now let's turn over, if you will, to the book of Isaiah, chapter 36. Isaiah, chapter 36. And here's what it says in verse 1. It came to pass in the 14th year of King Hezekiah. Now remember, when did Assyria go into take Israel into captivity? What year of Hezekiah's reign? 6 years. So what do we know automatically when we look at chapter 36? Assyria has already taken Israel into captivity. And in the 14th year of Hezekiah, the king of Assyria came up against all the defense cities of Judah and took them. So you see what he's doing? He's just fanning out through the country. And then you get into the latter part of chapter 36. And it talks about this guy and how he was, he was just a blabbermouth. And all he was out to do was spew hatred against Judah and Jerusalem. And basically just try to convince them orally, look, there's no use you guys going to war. You don't have a chance. Look at verse 14. Don't let Hezekiah deceive you, for he shall not be able to deliver you. Propaganda. Don't trust in your king, Hezekiah. He can't help you. Neither let Hezekiah make you trust in the Lord, saying, the Lord will surely deliver us. This city shall be delivered into the hand of the king of Assyria. You see, God's telling them one thing, and the men of Assyria is telling them something else. Notice what he tells them in verse 16. Hearken not to Hezekiah. For thus saith the king of Assyria, make an agreement with me by a present, and come out to me and eat you every one of his vine and every one his fig tree, and drink you every one the waters of his own cistern. What's the next verse say? Until I come and take you away to a land like your own. He said, now come on out from behind those walls and go on back to your fields and enjoy life until I get ready to take you into captivity. And you're going to get to work some crops. For us, it's just as good as what you've been working on your own. Verse 18, beware lest Hezekiah persuades you, saying, the Lord will deliver us. Now notice, if you will, chapter 37. Hezekiah heard it. He rent his clothes, covered himself with sackcloth, and went to the house of the Lord. He sent for Isaiah the prophet. And they said unto him, thus said Hezekiah, the day is a day of trouble, of rebuke, and blasphemy for the children of Israel. You see how much more detail we're getting here in Isaiah's account as opposed to the king's account in 2 Kings as well as 2 Chronicles account? Look at verse 6. Isaiah said unto them, be not afraid of the words that thou hast heard, wherewith the servants of the king, the Assyrians, blaspheme me. I'll send a blast upon them, And he'll hear rumor, return to his own land, and I'll cause him to fall by the sword. Who's in charge of this operation? The God of heaven tells Isaiah to tell the people, I've got control over Assyria. I raise them up to be a mighty nation, and I can bring them down just like I raised them up. Then notice, if you will, verse 11. Behold, thou hast heard what the kings of Assyria have done to all the lands by destroying them utterly, and shalt thou be delivered. Verse 14. Hezekiah received the letter from the hand of the messengers and read it, and Hezekiah went up to the temple of the Lord and prayed. Verse 16. God of Israel that dwellest between the cherubims. We talked about this last week. This prayer that Isaiah prayed, such a beautiful, beautiful prayer. A good way for us to learn to pray today. Now notice, if you will, goes on to say in verse 20, O Lord our God, save us from his hand, that all the kingdoms of the earth may know that thou art the Lord, even thou only. Notice the petition of this prayer. Yes, they wanted to be delivered. But notice how he worded it to Jehovah God. We want you to save us, but look what a lesson this is going to teach the countries round about it. We want to be saved to be able to do your will, to show the people what a mighty God we worship. You see how that when we petition our God today, we could use the advice of Hezekiah and others in wording and thinking about our prayer life. You know, I'm afraid we don't really consider how important our praying is.
We don't, I don't think.
Families do not know how blessed they are to be raised up in a family when mama and dad are prayer warriors. Praying to their God, teaching their children what it's like to pray and petition God in prayer. Oh, what an advantage it is when they become parents themselves. What an advantage it is when the men are asked to lead prayer in congregation. I remember being brought up in the church, and when the young men would become obedient to the gospel, then they would try to get them to wait on the table and begin to say a prayer around the Lord's table. And the older men would sit down and they would script a prayer out and tell them, now, you know, put it up there with you and lay it on the pulpit and read the prayer. You know, I don't guess there was anything wrong with that. Because you've got to start somewhere and you've got to have in mind, what are you praying for? But I'm afraid we have a tendency sometimes to pray canned prayers. And if we're called on to pray, we've got a prayer automatically in our mind prepared to pray. And it's not really coming from our heart, our mind, and our soul. Because our prayer life is an important part of this worship.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the men that lead these prayers, they need to be thinking about what they're saying. And it needs to come from this book. And it needs to come from their heart. Because they're leading everybody in this congregation. We're praying along with you. So our prayer life is important. Hezekiah knew this. Now notice, if you will, we go on in chapter 37. Verse 29, because they rage against me and thy torment has come upon my ears, therefore will I put my hook in thy nose and my bridle in their lips. I'll turn thee back by the way which thou camest. And he goes on telling him, you're going to eat this year, next year, and the year after. I've got those people. I'm going to put the fish hook in their nose and in their lips, and I'm going to send them right back where they came from. Verse 36 talks about that angel of the Lord went forth from the camp, and how that they lost that large army of people. And of course, the king goes back to Assyria, to Nineveh, and his son smote him with a sword. And then notice, if you will, while all this was going on, you talk about pressure. You talk about pressure now. Here is Hezekiah looking out over his city and seeing the Assyrian armies, 200,000 men, round about camping out, taunting the men, saying, open the gates and give up and come on out. Plus all that, he's near death. He's sick unto death. Now, we'll pick up there in 38 on Wednesday night, and we'll finish basically the divided kingdom, and we'll get on to these prophets. We'll start looking at Isaiah and Micah and Zephaniah and Nahum and Habakkuk and Jeremiah, because Jeremiah merges onto the scene about the same time. Thank you.